We're up to the Mishnah on Daf Yoram and Aleph. The Mishnah says that Kol Yetsh Yesh Alav Eikuti Pasul Futzmi Yitei Nashim Mishachur Eladim. Once again, the term get refers to any shtar. So all other shtaros, if they have a single Eikuti in their pasul, except for Yitei Nashim and Shachur Eladim. Why are they pasul? They're pasul because Rashi says they're chashan al Eidr Shekhar, so you can't believe them. So then, of course, the question is, why are Gitei Nashim and Shachur Eladim good? And you only require one eight to pass on a shtar if the eight is possible, because you need two eight of Sherem on a shtar. So the Gemishah then says, Masa Sheviyu Lefant Fereva Ben Gamliel Lekvaro Sinai Get Isha V'hayu Eidav Eidei Kutim V'hechshir. So they tell a story that they brought a Get Isha in front of Rabban Gamliel in a certain place, and he ate them with those kutim, and he declared kasher. So, as is very frequent, but I think it's frequent with Rabban Gamliel also, in the Mishnah, it looks like a Maisa listener on the surface. It looks like the story in the Mishnah contradicts the first part of the Mishnah, because the first Mishnah sounds like if there's a kuti, eight kuti, it's possible, then it's mashed with the two kutim would be possible even, it's kasher by Gita and Isha, but two ate them would be possible even by a get Isha, and the story seems to say otherwise. Sometimes the Bavli, in this case like this, will actually say that there's a machlokas atanaim, and that it's a contradiction. And sometimes that masa listar. Usually, that's what will happen. And in this case, that's exactly what Rebbe is going to do. I believe that somebody wrote a dissertation, a thesis on this at Revel. I think it was Professor Danzig, who taught at JTS a long time. Maybe it was this, that in the Yerushalmi you don't have such an approach to solving it. The simple resolution here, of course, would be to say that the aid was La Dacha to the Mishnah. That's good. And in fact, that the Gemara, doesn't the Gemara say it?
No, it was.
Maybe Tosa says it, that what you could have said is that the Eid Echad, well, for the first explanation, one session. Correct, it's the teacher by Shar. But that even by Shar Staros.
The only question is law, Dabka. Everyone wants to Dabka. Either Dabka to teach you about it, either Shar Staros.
No. Correct, but the point is that if it's to teach you that by all stars it's possible, but by Get Isha too would be fine, then there's no Masa Lister in the Gemara. Abai solves the problem by saying that it was Edo a Kasher, and that requires a lot. Or a Kuti. Correct, you have to modify at least three, you have to modify three words there. Okay, so now the Gemara asks them a more basic question. Yes.
I've learned that
a
fine
question. Yes, a fine.
No, I don't think I'm going to have a question long. So if you don't ask that question, you can't. Now I'm going to ask about, is there a contrast to the next mission? The next mission about our pose has it the plural.
Yeah.
It has the plural.
Except for that mission starts out with the Kshayrim clause. So you expect that mission to say, Afa Bisha Chosmei and Goyim. Right, you want to say even if there are two, and here you could say even if it's one, so that would be just fine. Yeah.
So I was hoping that I would come that I also read it as Lav Dabka when I first read it, and then I was basically like I was in the simplest part of the mission, not my cloud with the second, not back to one, and then I went to subject to see if that was what, or if I had suggested that you saw that was confirmed or not confirmed, and then the stuff that Philip says that it just starts with this whole lot of things, it starts Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Akuma Shnei Eidim Kutim, Kasher. So, I didn't know what to do with that.
Well, the question is that actually Rabbi Gamliel Shita?
So, there's no kind of comment, that's the weirdest thing.
He goes on to quote a Masanami.
Yeah, Masanami or Gamliel.
Right. So the. If you asked me, I would say that's just a shot in the Mishnah is Eid Echad, that the Mishnah says that any star that has an eight kuti is possible, but except for Gita Nishna Hadu or Krishna with one. And Rabbi Yehuda this time is disagree. Unless you argue it's, and Rabbi Yehuda this time is saying, no, by Gita Nishna, I feel
it's
good. The answer is that obviously what you would say looking at Tosefta is the Mishnah didn't provide us the material. The presentation of Rabbi Gamaliel Shita was in fact Rabbi Yehuda. It's just that it's anonymized. You have that. The problem also you're dealing with Tosefta is there are different kinds of Tosefta's. There's different kinds of functions of passage in Tosefta. If you're interested in this, I think in my dissertation. When I was talking, when I wrote an introduction to Seth Adios, so this is not Adios alone, I sort of laid out five, six, seven different ways that Tosefta relates to the Mishnah, because there's a whole scholarly question in general, which comes first, the Tosefta or the Mishnah? And the answer is usually the Mishnah, but there may be passages from Tosefta that the Mishnah may be formed from it. We still see kind of the actual material. So when you see a statement, something in the middle of a statement, that's commenting an effect on the Mishnah. It's adding something to the Mishnah. I would argue that Tosefta is adding is that the safe place is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. The only question then is how is Rabbi Yehuda functioning? Because Rabbi Yehuda is the one Tana who always, the Gemara, the Amoraim discuss at length. Rabbi Yochanan has different versions of Rabbi Yochanan, what he said. When is Rabbi Yehuda coming to argue? When is he coming to qualify? The Gemara has it when you have the terms Amasai, Bamet, or Mamurim. But in this case, I don't know how to qualify, how to understand this, because it did quote Rabbi Gamaliel's opinion, it just said Masa. So in the Tosefta, it might be Rabbi Yehuda is not arguing. You could claim that, in other words, I guess there are three possibilities here, even though I've learned this Gemara four times, I can't remember how it all plays out. The three possibilities is that the Seifa, the Reisha is locked after, in which case there's no contradiction. Second possibility is that the Reisha is Dafka, but it's Dafka either because they disagree, or it's Dafka because they want to tell you, they don't disagree, as you're saying, but they want to tell you that by Shkar, even the Echad is possible. Those are the three possibilities here. And partially what that depends upon is how to read Rabbi Yehuda says, Afilu Shneichos Mehem, as you're quoting, I'm assuming, quoting accurately, is he disagreeing with the Tanakhama? In which case, it's very clear that it's the Dafka, and it's if it's a machlokas, or is he simply qualifying, in which case it is Vedanta, but he's just clarifying. But either way, it's not going to be La Dafka, right? Both of those interpretations. So that way, I think we'll work that out. I think either way, however he's doing right, when he says that Fidu Shem Chos, he's coming, clarifying, arguing, I don't know, but I think it's clear that he heard the statement of the Tanakhama that there's an Eid Echad, so he's either disagreeing or he's saying blah, 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 because of that. Okay. Now, we spoke a little bit last week who were the Kutim historically, and there is actually a separate machlokas that I alluded to whether the Kutim are actually halachically Jewish, whether the Kutim are Geri Arayas or Geri Emes. And they're actually the one given. Again, it's not relevant anymore, Mizban Hazeh, because the Kutim are not Jewish anymore. They were declared not Jewish at some point in the very late Talmudic period, according to the Gemara Kulin. But the Mishnah Kuti lo yisav kutis. I think Rabbi Elazar's statement, the Mishnah in the fourth paragraph of Kiddushin. So the Gemara there, the Chayim Hamad Beis, has a discussion of what exactly is the psul of the Kuti, what's the psul yichas of the Kuti. And there are two different possibilities there in the Gemara. And part of the question is, were the Kutim Jewish, were they not Jewish? If they weren't Jewish, then we kind of... There are two things Rashi points out that you have to explain. Number one, the Kohanim... The Pesukim don't say that the Kohanim intermarried with the Kutim. The Kohanim that Sancheirev, pull back to go help these people learn Mishpat Elohei Aretz. It doesn't say that this Kohanim actually intermarried. The Gemara assumes that they did. And then the question is, who were the Kohanim marrying and what kind of Kohanim were they? So one day in the Gemara is that they were Geri Arayos. They weren't Jewish, the Kutim. They only converted out of fear. And that opens up a different can of worms, which is, does that mean anybody who converts for insincere reasons is not Jewish? So you have to probably say that the Geri, that's a question. But you could say they were Geri Arayos and they never actually really converted, as they thought only a fake conversion because they were afraid of the lions killing them, which is kind of hard to understand because if that were the case, the lions would have kept killing them, because you can fool the basin, but you can't fool God. But be that as it may, I don't know quite how to deal with that, so the Gemara says that they were Geri Arayos, and they're not Jewish. They're not Jewish, even though the lions might have stopped killing them. And the Kohanim were desirable of Sulim, so the Kutim are basically Kutim, are prohibited in marriage because they're not Jewish, probably. But then there's another day in the Gemara, a couple of other days, that the Kutam were giving MS, but somebody was Nisariyat for him, and therefore there are Seikos of Namzerus, and therefore Kuti and Kutis would be a problem for that reason. So here, despite all of that, despite the Psul Yichos, so lots and lots of Mishnahis assume that the Kutam are Jewish and discuss them in Halacha context.
I know there's a lot of academic work
of whom the Samaritan, where their actual origin was. Right? The Samaritans are a somewhat distinct group of people in the Mishnah period. We know this from the Mishnah, we know this from the Christian Bible, we know this with lots and lots of sources. So what their exact origins, I don't know. Does anybody actually know? You have the story in Malachim Bey's Parak Yud Zion. Again, they don't call themselves Kutim. We call them Kutim. Kuta is one of the names of the places Sanhedrin brought the people from. Brought some people from. And then you have again these people at the beginning of Bayit Sheni, Tosfos makes reference to this, Pirkei Rav Lezer, that there was some type of knas against them because they tried stopping the Minyan Beis Hamikdash. But again, I don't think they're labeled. I don't remember. They might be from Sharon. It's in Ezra Nechemiah. I don't remember the exact details. Tobiah Hamoni was one of the people, so he was not Kuti in that sense. So you have to look and see if they're based with Shomron or something like that. So I don't know if we really know exactly. But they were these people who probably considered themselves Jewish, and the question is, did the rabbis consider them Jewish? So in the Mishnahis, they are treated as Jewish until, in the Mishnahis they are, and then the Gemara Chulin in the first parak says that, again, I don't know what this means, a historical statement, because I'm pretty sure the Samaritans don't worship images of dogs, but they said they found the Gemus Yona, the Hargrisim, and they did the Asam Kigoyim Gemur Mechol Devarim, which in itself is odd because, it sounds like it's Xeris Rabbanon Asa'um, except for you can't take someone who's Jewish and declare them not Jewish with Rabbanon. And what does that mean? What are the implications of that? But halachically speaking, they're not Jewish. That's the way you do it. What's that?
Yes.
And we have it on the flip side. Tosfos in Ketubas and Daf Yud on the sugya of Ger Katan asks, how do you have a Ger Katan? Like, if the Yayin that a Ger Katan touches is not MS Metzoyah, because it's only Zed Rabban, and obviously not Rabban with Zerah, but how can a Ger Katan, like Ger Katan, marry someone Jewish? So whatever, Tosfos talks about that question. But be that as it may, so the Kutim are the Kutim. So the Bryce of the Gemara wants to know, the idea that a kuti is chashud on eid shef, he's chashud on eid shef, and therefore, when it comes to a regular shtaritz pasul, except for gitei nashim and shechriyah lada, which you have to about why. So the question is, whose opinion, or what is the svara in terms of distinguishing the kutim between a get shechur and a get isha versus all other shtaritz? So the Gemara asks, "Mani Masnisa, Lo Tanakama, Lo Rabbi Losef, Lo Rabbi Shimon Leo." There are three opinions in the Braisa about matzah produced by Kuti Incorporated. You have this matzah, and it comes from a Kuti matzah baking factory, and the question is, are you allowed to eat their matzah? Again, obviously, it wasn't a Kuti matzah baking factory. You remember how people used to make matzahs? At home. Now, that's what everybody did. You made matzahs at home. You know how you made sure it was kosher Pesach? You didn't let it rise. That's what you did. You didn't have a hashlachas badatz with the OU on your shmur matzah. You made matzah at home because guess what? That's what you always did. That sometimes you let it rise, but this time you don't. So you make your matzah at home. You know, today there's a chumrah, which is not a chumrah, it's there in the Shulchan Aruch, but ideally you're supposed to bake your matzah on Erev Pesach after Chatos, at the time you could bring the carbon Pesach. So there are people who are trying to do that, although typically people have their own matzah setups. So I were capable of making matzah. Bits of experiments last year. I wasn't terribly successful, although I made a little practice. I didn't do it at Pesach or for Pesach. I did it afterwards. But if I were more successful, I might actually do it at this stage of life. Yes, it makes sense either if your wife doesn't care or wants you out of the house, or you don't have little kids or things like that. Then it's easy. You know, little kids running around. So unless you take your little kids to the matzah baking, that's great. Of course, we don't have the matzah baking capacity of factories. to make everybody's matzah post Erev Pesach. When Pesach comes out on Shabbos, it's a more Erev Shabbos. When Erev Pesach comes out on Shabbos, it's a more interesting question. It would seem the ideal time to bake it then is Motzei Shabbos, while everybody waits for you to make the Seder. Anyway, not our topic. Well, today everybody would have probably baked it Erev Pesach because that's when you bake the stuff. You wanted bread that night, so that's when you made it. And it is bread. It is not leavened bread, but it is bread. So you have Kuti Meitzer Matzah in his oven, and the question is, are you allowed, is it good for Pesach? And there are two questions. Number one, is it kosher for the mitzvah of achilas matzah, which requires lishma? And number two, is it kosher for Pesach? Are you worried that he was shomer at achimus? So the Gemara says, the Tanya, matzah kuti muteris adam yidei chovasar b'Pesach. The matzah of a kuti is mutter to eat, and you can not only eat it, but unlike other things, like you can, there's lots of, you know, matzahs that you can eat well Pesach or on Pesach, but you can't use it for the mitzvah of achilas matzah because it wasn't baked l'shem mitzvah matzah. So you can take your regular man of shevet, you know, 5-pound box that you might get from ShopRite for free before Pesach because you spent enough money on Pesach goods there, so you get a free 5-pound box of matzah, but you can't use that for shvuah. Yes.
I was a little confused about the matzah.
Needs to be the shame. It needs to be the shame.
Got it. So it's not a matter of guarding it to make sure things don't happen.
No, you also need that.
Okay.
That's the minimum level because
it's also says shmira v'shem matzah.
Yeah, no, it's the same mitzvah matzah. The same mitzvah matzah. Yes, that is the accepted maskana. It's not maybe not as pashut as not so 100% pashut in all kinds. You know, of course, also just said yes. Bottom line is matzah needs to be not just that you guard it from not becoming chametz, but that you do it l'shem mitzvah matzah. So, Rabbi Shimon Leil says, and I'll fill in the Gemara Chulin. The Gemara Chulin understands that when you have a situation, the machlokas the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Shimon Leil is if you have a mitzvah that's written in the Torah, but you don't know whether or not they were muchsaf in doing it. So the Tanna Kamma assumes that if it says it in Torah, then the Kutim you assume follow it, unless you know they don't. And Rabbi Shimon Leil is going to say, and the Gemara doesn't fill that in here, what the Machlokas for the Chulin Nathala does, it says that Rabbi Shimon Leil believes that if you that even though it's written in the Torah, if you're not Muchsaf that they observe this mitzvah, then you don't do it. The assumption behind this, which is probably a logical assumption, is that the Kutim did not have power for a Shmuel Pan. The one classic example of this that's always cited, and Tosus asked the question here, is the Kutim did not understand that they even Lasite Mitzvah other than literally, and therefore, even a mitzvah that the Kutim themselves observed, you could not trust them for you unless you could ascertain they would do it for themselves. So if the Kuti shechted an animal and you didn't watch the Shechita, you could not eat from the Shechita unless the Kuti himself ate a piece of it first. And if he ate a piece of it, so then it would be accepted. But if he didn't, then even though he's mostly only to eat, you know, properly slaughtered meat, he'd be happy to feed you non-kosher meat because he believes that maybe those who means you're not allowed to put a stomach block in front of a blind person, a literally blind person. That's the way Chazal presented supposedly. So Gemara asked that question in Chulin, and which just goes on to the point that everybody, in effect, knows that there are certain things that Kutim were Mosak in. You know, the Gemara there doesn't mention this, but the Gemara, the Mishnah in the Darim, at the end of, I don't know, the third paragraph or something, Daf Yomi should have done in the last week or so, taught maybe a little more than that, I don't remember enough. Hanogir me och leishum. So, the Mishnah assumes that Kutim also would eat garlic on Shabbos on Friday night. Even though that's clearly not a Gendarais, it's not really the Pasuk, it's Takhalas Esrash. So, it's clear that they had that some of the things that are not explicit in the pasuk that they do anyway, but often they didn't have such things. So the Tanna Kamma assumes, unless we know otherwise, if it's in the pasuk, we assume they do it for themselves. And Rabbi Shimon Leil is going to say, no, it's not enough. You also actually have to know. I have it backwards, actually. I'm sorry, that may be in the Havamina of the Gemara. The Havamina, the Tanna Kamma says that it has to be Siva Bikra. It has to be linked enough to the Pasuk. And Rav Shimon Leil says that even if it's not in the Pasuk, if they are Mosak in it, it's okay as well. That's the Maskana of the Gemara there. So apparently, Shmartan HaSamatzos is sufficient sufficient reason to think that you have to have shmira and even l'shem is just matzah. So the matzah skuti ni peres on the yitzin of chametz pesach. Where the lasan also the pishayim bekiim bevitukei mitzvos. They're not that careful about mitzvos. And Rabbi Shimon Liel Omer, kol mitzvah had the first reading, by the way, the Gemara points out, had the first reading that I gave been correct. That was the Gemara's Havanina. It would have said, in Pechzikuba, as opposed to kol mitzvah Shechzikuba. So kol mitzvah Shechzikuba sounds like it's including something in Tanakhama and Bilukim Ken. So Rabbi Shimon Liel is saying that kol mitzvah Shechzikuba kutim harbe medachtike by Yosef Yisra. Okay? Harbe medachtike by, I don't know if it's where the harbe goes. Or it's just duplicate language, but they're more careful than we are. They're more far-brent about the things they do than we are. So, the Gemara says, Mani, whose opinion would be reflected in the Mishnah that Shtarshtaros and Ekuti is possible, but when it comes to a Get Isha, right now, let's say, an Eidech Ekuti is kosher. The Gemara says, E Rabbi Yalot, E Tanakama, E the Shtarshtaros Rabbi. According to the Tanakama, if you master Shtar, you know, whatever it is that you know you're not allowed to give a Doshet there, if the kutim on emonim on a geisha, then why are they on other stars? Presumably, it's the same principle. And e Rabbi Elazar, if you know geisha, I don't know why Rabbi Elazar accepted a kuti on a geisha. And finally, the e Rabbi Shimon Liel, ida achsuk apilu shar stars nami, ida lo achsuk apilu geisha nami. Rabbi Shimon Liel, who just you know, what is it that why do you assume that the mosuk or the not mosuk? So either the in a checker or the not in a checker. And then the Gemara says, "V'chichel Rabbi Shimon Liel, who the achsuk v'hav alasuk v'hag." Oh, maybe they are muksach to take gadisha and shechar eretz seriously, but not so much for the shars. So the Gemara says, "V'chichel my iriyachana filu treinam." Why not? If that's the case, if the issue is that 80 kute and the shalim shechar on money, you know they're money grubbers, but when it comes to issur heter, there they would then mess around. An attitude I can never imagine any religious people ever having. So if that's the case, then they're very nice. But then you should accept to wait them. That was the question. I'm sorry.
It's a general question.
Okay. Okay. So Amar. So Al Alamo Amar Rabbi Elazar Lavashiru Bo Elayde Echon Elayde Echot Kuti Bavad. Why did he say they only allowed one kuti?
Where's the statement come from?
Yeah. Right here. This is how we know it. This is the Akar. Think of our saying. We know what Blazer said. Right? It's not from another subject. Right? We discussed briefly when the Gemara said earlier, Vam Rabbi Yochanan ain't Ere Pachas Mitrei. So there Rashi says, I don't know where Rabbi Yochanan said this originally. And Rabbi Yochanan says, oh, that Mishnah in Subas. Right? By the Eidah, you know, the Eidah Malakun al Piedacha, there's Manashe Enom, Shining Shorin, that's where Yochanan said, Ein Error, El Apostle Mishnah. Here it's obvious where Rabbi Elazar said, Rabbi Elazar said, though Shir El Eidacha means our Mishnah. Right? Daniel, he does have to say that precisely because of your possibility. Right? He's, and you could argue, right, you could, without the perceptive, you could argue what shot might be. Note, by the way, that you could have brought a better smach to why the Eid is not lobbed off. You know why? When the Torah says Eid, what does it mean? Chomakom Shamar Torah Eid Shnayim B'Mashma Atshifu Elacha Kasev Eid Echad. That's the Gemara's rule. That if it says Eid Stam in the Torah, it means Eidim. If it says Eid Echad, it means one Eid. Yeah.
Shouldn't there be a possible other fact that this is really all of our saying this? If you go back to the original Raita, there was always one before, don't trust these people in it. Right? So, it seems to me like you could read this, again, not the way
Rabbi is here. Wait. But yes, you also know something about Rabbi Elazar, which is five. What's that? I can't believe what I just said. Can you ask your question again? I lost my mind. Never mind. A sign corrected me. He was being very nice about it. Can you ask your question again, please?
We assumed that
the Rabbi Elazar auditory audience is in Rabbi Elazar at the top of the audience. No, Ephraim corrected you and corrected me because I fell into your trap for a minute. I wasn't even thinking about it. Ephraim, correct him, please.
It wasn't a trap, I just didn't know.
I know, but it was a trap for me because I stepped into it, even though you didn't intend it.
The language of Hamas implies that it's a member rather than a race that works because there's a more of a disruptor.
What's his last name, Ephraim? Ben Kadas. And the Atana's name, Rashi points this out numerous places in Shas, but sometimes Rabbi Elazar quotes Rabbi Elazar, numerous places by quote, that Amor is Rabbi Elazar ben Kadas, the Tana is Rabbi Elazar ben, anybody?
Hercules?
No, that's Eliezer, fine.
No,
he's earlier. This Rabbi Elazar is one of the big five. Rabbi Huda Ramey, Rabbi Yosef Shim, Rabbi Elazar. This one Rabbi Kiva is that group, and Rabbi Chani you can learn also if you want. Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. Okay. So this is, thank you very much, Ephraim, for correcting me. You were so nice about it. I'm not being Megala, but I will confess that for a moment I said, yeah. Then I want to then, but if you want to do that, I'll bring in Rabbi Elazar of, what was the Rabbi Elazar I wanted, Ephraim, that solves the problem? If it's a Tana. It's not. You're right. But
Sorry.
No. What Shita do I want you to bring here, which will explain why you don't have to worry about it? Eidei Nesirah Karti. Which the Gemara will, the whole assumption here, of course, is that it's Eidei Nesirah, but if it's Rabbi Elazar, of course. Right. Of course, it's Rabbi Elazar. Right? You could just say, he's not my. The Gemara should talk about it in the other case, but you could say, oh, yeah, of course, he's not worried about the Yitzhak because they didn't hear. We're not going to get that. When it got going
to
come.
That we want.
What?
That we want.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, fine.
But let's
just do what's correct, which is it is Rabbi Elazar the Amora.
I'm not going to spend time trying to understand what's not true.
Right.
One more clarification.
So
Rav is for Babylonian
Amoraim. Rav is no Svicha. Rabbi is Svicha. So sometimes you can't tell. I mean, it's not immediately obvious if you get a Rabbi in front of somebody who's could have been a Tana, could have been Amora. There aren't that. I mean, there are some. Like, you know, the difference between when you're learning Gemara Babli, Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Yehuda.
Yeah.
Right? Rabbi Yehuda is the Tana, Rabbi Yehuda, right? Rabbi Yehuda is Rav and Shmuel's Talmud. So, yes.
But you could have these Rabbis.
Correct. Rabbi Elazar, by the way, was a Talmud of. You should know this.
Which Rabbi Elazar?
This one. The Ben Kadas. It's Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. I already told you the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. He was one of the five after the 24,000 died. Hay Olam Shomim Ashavar Rabbi Akiva Larvasinu Shavadar Mishnaim, and they were those the big five. Rabbi Nechemia, Rabbi Elazar Tanakh, which is but they're all Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. But who was Rabbi Elazar ben Kadas's Rebbe? It's a great Gemara. I think it's in Yevamos where. He quotes something and doesn't mention Rabbi Yochanan's name. Rabbi Yochanan was machbid, so one of the other guys in the Beis Medrash wanted to make shalom and said, look, you know, when Yeshua quoted a din, every time Yeshua Menun quoted a din, he said, Hacham Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, everybody knows that when Yeshua said that, it was Moshe Rabbeinu, it was from Moshe Rabbeinu. So your Talmud is Rabbi Elazar, everybody knows when your Talmud, Rabbi Elazar quotes something, it's assumed to be your Torah. So he has not to quote you because everybody knows it's yours. Anyway, okay, so the Gemara, so that's what the Lazar says. Moshir Barerechot Kuti Bavad. So how does it make sense? If you're going to say Achzuk for whatever, for this thing, why aren't you eight insufficient? So the Olam, the Gemara says, it is Rabbi Elazar. Chagon, and why you want to know what, the question is, why only Nerechot? Though the Chasim Yisrael of itself. It's when the Jew, the eight Kasha that you know, was not a Kuti, when he signed second. Why does that make a difference? So the Gemara explains, the Ilav the Kuti Chaver Hava, if it weren't for the fact that he was a firm Kuti, and that this Jew knew that he was a firm Kuti and he was reliable, he would never have signed after him. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, so it could be a regular document, why don't you say the same thing? That the Jew would never have allowed the Kuti, he would never have signed after the Kuti. If a criminal or apostle signs in front of you, don't sign afterwards. Ela Amrin, and why did the Jew sign second? What we would say is Ravacha Shava. So the Gemara says, now I'll tell you why. What happened in this case by the get is the Jew signed second. I'm sorry, one second. Oh no. So you know why you not accepted on Shah Staras? Because maybe what will happen is the following. Any other Shah, if the Jew was the second aid, why did you say? He saw it was a Kuti Kashas. The answer is no. The reason why we apostle is Amrin and Rav Chashavik Lamai Bekashish Fide. He left room for thinking that maybe the other aid they were going to get to sign will be older than him and more Chashav. So this, by the way, when we sign a Ksuba, so it's not Ma'akeh, but when I do Ksuba at a wedding, so first I ask the aid if there's a coin or a lady, so the Chabin that way, you know, lady maybe technically not to sign first. But if neither is a coin or a lady, I just ask who's older than whoever's older signs first. The Gemara here is Marame's to the idea, the Minhag, the Derech Eretz, that the older person should sign first. So if that's the case, the reason why you pass all the shtaros, even though the Jew signed second, is because maybe he signed first, but he signed in the second spot, and he left room for someone else, and then they end up getting an Ibkuti instead of someone who's older than him, and appropriate, and kosher. So if that's the case, Hachanami by the get, say the same thing, Hachanami, Rafa Shlach, Laman the kosher's minet. So why did that solve a problem? So that's Amar HaPapa, Zosomeris, Ede HaGed, and Chosin Zebelozah. Ah, you see from this, is that Ede HaGed are not allowed to sign without each other present. The question is, why? So the Gemara says, by time Amar Rashi, Tzer Mishnah Kochem. Mishnah Kochem is a reference to the last Mishnah, I think in the 6th or 7th parak. I think it's the 6th parak. The Mishnah there says, on the Samach Vav on the base, at the end of the 6th parak, that if a person says to 10 people, say of the year, Kisru Tzurgat Ve'ishvi, so one of them has the right to get himself. Right? One of the very important halachas in Gittin is that, it's not focused, Mili Lominsur in Lashaleach. You cannot hand over the tzav to write a get to a shaleach. You have to tell the sofer, whoever's the writer of the get, you write the get for me. I can't say, Yoni, can you do me a favor? Can you tell Jake, when you see him tomorrow, to write a get? Nothing new. I'd have to tell Jake myself if he's the sofer. So, if I say to a whole group of people, Kisru to the get Yishti, so Kisru doesn't mean everybody has the right to get, it means one of you has the right to get. And it's assumed, because I didn't say Kulchan, that any two people can sign from that group. Right? But one of them has the right, two of them have to sign, and that's fine. However, Kulchan Kisovu, if I say all of you I want to write and give a get to my wife, then still Echad Kose, because he doesn't really intend for everyone to write, everyone can't write. But the Kulan Chosmin, everyone has to sign it. It's a tepeda. Lefikach emeisechem and harei zeh get batel. If one of them dies, the get will be batel. So the Gemara says, sounds like that when all of them, when he says kulchem, when he tells people to sign a get, the halacha is they all have to be present for the signing, even if they're not actually signing, it's zera atu kolchem. So in this case, when two witnesses have to sign the get, so even though theoretically each one preserves that no room for mistake, if you don't have two witnesses, the get's not a get, both of them have to be present at the same time. If both of them have to be present at the same time, then the yisrael would never have signed if the kuti, signed, and he weren't a kuti chater. I don't know remember if anybody said this explicitly, but once you get to the Maskan of the Gemara, you don't need Chasim Yisrael himself, right? Because it doesn't matter if the Jew signs first or he signs second, he knows who's present. Tosus asks a very interesting question here. And the Havamim of the Gemara, thought that if the Kuti, that the Jew has to sign second, Tosus says, how can this get be a good debt? Because there's only an Eidach on the get. Why? Well, there are two Eidim. The answer is no, it's not two Eidim. Why? Because the first Eid is an Eid Kuti. How do you know the Eid is an Eid Kasha? Because the second Eid tells you that. Essentially, the entire get is being Mukshar al Pi Eid Echad. The Tosus just says that the reason why you don't require it is because the Daraisa, the Kuti is Kasha, it's Geri Emes. So, therefore, we just Koshish that the Kuti might lie. So it's not really the Israel afterwards that makes a difference. So it's not that the testimony is really all the Jews' testimony, right? Now, if we had someone who was mukhsas to be apostle, not that one person can be mashter the person, but let's say I would testify with him and say, by the way, I'll tell you, believe me, he's an Eid Kasha. Even if we believe me, it means the testimony is all essentially mine, and that's an Eid Echad. So that's what Tosfos says, no medina the Eid Kuti is Kasha. But they were mashter. So in this case, it was sufficient that the Israel was with him is an indicator that, in fact, that he is Eid Kuti Chaper. Kufa, Amr of Laza, Ben Kudas, Lo Ashirbo Elerachat Kuti Bilad. So my Kamash Malan, what's the Chedesh Tina? Kol Getche Yishal of Eid Kuti Pasul. The Mishnah says, Daniel, Eid Kuti. That's 1/8. So the Gemara says, no. Imi must be sin havamina filu treinami. Even true. Vahad yekatani chad mishan to bishtaras hafilu chadami lo. Kamash Malan, that Rav Laza is telling you that the Mishnah is the Nafka. So not just because the way it had to teach, what it had to teach was that that on Shar Shtaros, even an eight echad, even a single eight could be pasuls, but that by get may be two. But no, no, it's vidafka. One is pasul on Shar Shtaros, one only is kasher on kitei nashim shukher vadim, but if more than one, even nashim shukher vadim is pasul. So the Gemara says, utrei lo, is that really true? So unless it's a maser listor, it's clear that it's lav dafka eid echad by get isha. So the Gemara says, no, Amar Abaye, to me, eido. Okay. Rava Amar no, la olam trei. Rav Gamliel miflag palik. Rav Gamliel disagrees. V'chasra v'chasra v'hachi katani. From a Gamliel, Mashir Bishnai, Umasanami Shavir, the Firma Gamliel, the Parasai, Gerisha, the Hayre, the Vedic Kutim, the Hashir. Yes.
So does this mean that they didn't have the MRI here to have the Safta?
Probably. Certainly Abayi didn't. Rava might have and just didn't bother to quote it, but that may have influenced his interpretation.
Because if there is clearer of the conclusion, if there's a second opinion, it's not Rashid, then Gamliel is.
No, I understand, but the Tosefta is Rava, basically.
Right.
The Tosefta is Rava.
Isn't it that you think that in the Tosefta, there is an
unstated
Tanakhama with
Rava? Yeah, that I have no doubt about. That's the Tosefta, which is like a supplementary comment, or I would even argue what's really being added there is Amrabi Yehuda, Afilu Shrine is good. And that's what's being added, and then they quote the rest of the Mishnah. Okay.
That's my general question. So,
yeah.
I was a little confused when we first saw this idea of Kudim. Are or are not the Dafik and Mitzvot impacting on their eligibility to be witnesses? Like, are you just saying that, like, the sort of who's in and who's out of being an Eid Mishnah is just like any other Mitzvot? Like, I assume that it was like,
Edus and Nemanus are, I mean, they're going to be tied together, they're two different things. Nemanus generally in halacha goes along the following lines, that hachashad l'davar is not neman on that davar. If you're hashad on a specific thing, let's say you're hashad to eat pork, let's say you're hashad to eat trade meat, but you're not hashad to eat trade fish, you're very much not to eat trade fish. So then you're chashed on, I mean, maybe a good example, but let's say you're chashed to eat trade meat, but you're not chashed on to wear shatnez. You wouldn't wear shatnez. So then you're neman to say that this soup doesn't have shatnez in it, but you're not neman to say the food is kosher. And within food, there could be distinctions, especially in a chamor or lakal, that you could say that if you're chashed, you know, someone who's chashed, I would say the following. Someone who's chashed to eat dairy out, and it is also to eat dairy out, it's an issue of trina sakum, and unless it's just milk, okay, but if it's usually it's cheese. So you're not kosher necessarily to eat red meat. I probably could rely upon you to say that this meat is kosher meat, that it's OU meat, because even though it's wrong, certainly there's a different level of chomer of the yisur. So there are lots of people, I think, we dare have, who would not eat meat out and certainly wouldn't bring it into their house. So nemanus is generally dependent on what you do in that thing. The only thing that passes a person to nemanus across the board is chilul Shabbos b'parhesia and Avodah Zar, that's not typically what we talk about. Full Shabbos for Hesher could be a real issue, depending upon how you define that. So basically, when it comes to Nemanos, except for Shabbos and Avodah Zarah, full Shabbos for Hesher and any Avodah Zarah, so any other Avera that passes you for that Nemanos, for that Avera, but not for anything else. Eidus is a separate issue. Eidus is the Machlokas Abaye and Rava. What passes you? It's one of the six cases we pass on Kabaye. It's the I'll take down which is it? I think it's the Ayin. No, it's the Nem. You want to go through my head? Oh, I know what it is. I know what the Ayin is. Yud is Yer Shlomidas, that's one most of you might know if you learn about Metzia and Metzias in school or something like that. It's Yer Shlomidas, Yer Shalat, and Pasal Kabaye, that it is not. The Ayin is Eidzomir Mafrehu Nisso, Nitanu Abahu Nisso. And the Machlokas, the Gemara, I understand the Machlokas in the Parapuru, but we pass the Kabaye Eidzomir Mafrehu Nisso. And the lama is a machlokas harishonim. I know one sheep is, it's lechi ha'omi me'el and erevin. I don't remember what the other sheep is. The kuf is kiddushin shlomim sulavia, which is in the second paragraph of kiddushin. I think we passed in like Abaye the Chumra, that a kiddushin shlomim sulavia from the get-go is still a chashash kiddushin. And the gimel is gilu daita begita, which is in the fourth paragraph here. I don't remember which way it works. And then the mem is mumar mumar lahachis. Someone who is the issue is the following: someone who's a rusher of the law of the chamos, someone who violates averos, but is not monetary. It is because they don't, it's not one of their principles. And if they're a mumar lefeyavon, I think, and any monetary issues, then the assumption is they have a taiva and they might lie, because it somehow will benefit them, and therefore they have no nemanus. Let's say it's just not, meaning, chaz is just not one of my principles, that's all. It's not because I have such a taiva for bacon. But I mean, because you don't care if you put it in front, the way you define a mumar lahachis, which is usually much more chumer than a mumar lahachis, but normally it is, but now here, is the mumar lahachis says, oh, you know, I'm so hungry, and I can't find a McDonald's, I have to have the bacon. Whereas the person who comes into the supermarket, there's two choices, and they cost the same thing. You could pick the kosher meat and the turkey. You pick it up out of the container, the cabinet, whatever it is. So that's the mumar lahachis. So by eidus, it actually goes the other way, because the mumar lepeyavon is the one who afraid will lie because maybe someone will bribe him or something like that. So there we pass like Abaye that even a mumar lahachis is possible. So essentially, if you violate any avera which has malchus, let's say out of the rice, if you violate an avera that has malchus, then in principle you're possible to eat this. The question of like if you eat and see you, that's a different question. But bottom line is that if you violate lahachis for malchus, so then you're possible the rice of avus. So that's why ain abikim and tukemitzus can actually, you know. If they're not matzah to eat matzah on Pesach, that may not pass on the Eidus. But if they eat chametz on Pesach, they pass on the Eidus.
So then I understand that level of then, the idea here is that if they are adopted in this mitzvah, then the question is just,
it's not Eidus, it's for nemanos. If they're baki and medakik in mitzvah matzah, so then they'll be, you know, then we would say, Rabbi Lazar says they're not bakid, they're not matzah. So we never trust them. Right, because they're not careful about mitzvahs. But this is not an Eidus issue. For Eidus, it would simply be if they violate law, so then they're getting
trusted. I guess that's a more general question about why non-Jews are not allowed. Are you aware that people who are not, who don't do mitzvahs?
Very interesting. I mentioned once in Shir not so long ago, probably Matthias, maybe it was last week, there's only one shita. The Gemara is clear that an Eved is possible Eidus, and it's clear that a guy is possible Eidus. There is a shita, I think it's Rabbeinu Yakar. I don't know why I think that. It's quoted by the Beis Yosef and Choshen Mishpat. In the Siman, probably on Sulei, there's a round Siman on the ballot, who thinks that Midaraisa, a guy who's an honest person, we know he's Mosak, that he's honest, that's the Kashalei this, which is. Now, what I did see, I noticed this morning, the Ran implies that the Psul of a guy is not because, even a guy who is 100% Naman is possible, it's not, he's possible, but it's not because of Chashash Mishak, just because it's there, Sakasa. That's what the Rabbi. No, so for the Kuti, I think the issue is that he's Jewish, remember, in this context.
Right.
And he's just not careful. He's not. Again, this is not Eidus. This is not Eidus. This is Nemanus. The two separate things. And Isha has Nemanus even though she can't testify in formal Eidus. And Isha is 100% Nemanus, right? The Eilach and Amirisun is learned from probably from Nida.
But why do they want the Kuti to be adopted for Shar or people?
Well, it has to be medakek, not to be on Eidu Sheker. It has to be makked on Eidu Sheker.
That's what you're saying?
Yeah. Rashi said, the chashidim Eidu Sheker. And so when you say they're not the king doing it, they're not medakek, it means that, the shara, whenever I lie, what's the big deal? Right. And if you want to distinguish, you know, by Gerisha, maybe we lie because he doesn't appreciate the state's matter more. That's all. Okay. There is actually a third category, interesting. Ramosha, I think I don't know if I've ever found this tshuva, it's written the tshuva, it probably is, I asked Rosh Hashanah about this a long time ago. Ramosha dealt with the situation in Russia, I guess where you had children who weren't from, they were communists, of course, and the parents are still from. And the parents, when they became elderly, they moved in with the children. And at a certain point, they needed to eat meat, but they couldn't procure it themselves. And the question is, could they rely upon their children? And I think what Moshe said, that if they knew their children would never give them that kosher meat, the children themselves would give them that kosher meat, they wouldn't give the parents as such. So Moshe has this idea that goes beyond their manos, but it's actually just the idea.
Yeah.
It's both appealing and it's a big fish, right? So you have those three categories. You have Eidus, which has sort of the highest standard. You have Nemanos, which you have people who are not kosher for Eidus because they're Nemanos. And then you have a Yehudiya situation with someone who's not kosher for Eidus, who doesn't generally have Nemanos. Like this, these two, their children will not be Neman to feed somebody else. They're not kosher meat. But the parents, it's kind of a different situation. That's a Mirpas issue. It's a totally unrelated issue. Okay. So the Gemara, the Mishnah continues. Kol ashtaros olos bar koshel akum apal pi shechosmeim odeh kocham b'shem chutz v'yigitei nashem shechurei avadim. So here the Mishnah is the exact opposite. If you're dealing with shtaros that are filed in a secular court, and the Gemara will say that our kos, at least the Mishnah's version, is dafka. It's got to be in our kos. So then, even though the witnesses on the shtaros are goyim, ksherim, except for gitei nashim shechurei avadim. So the pshat in the Mishnah, at least, is the Tana Kama. The pshat is that we're relying upon the witnesses in the documents, and since goyim are not the nekrisus, and they're also not going to edus, generally, by things that require formal edus, a gerisha and a shechur eved is possible. But when it comes to dinei mamonos, and the Gemara will, presumably because, I don't want to say because the goyim are b'nei mamonos, which they are, but that doesn't make them edus sherim, but the way it's presented, let's say that it's not a krisis issue, so then the goyim are in their mamonos because it's in our chaos, because it's a chazaka that they don't lie, their chaos won't put up with it. So if it's been filed in our kaos, it's like a kiyum in our basin, a kiyum our stars, the conceptual equivalent, and therefore you don't have to worry. Except for gitei nashim shechurei avadim, because it's not about nemanos, it's about the kashrus of the eidim, formal kashrus, not kashrus, being kosher for krisus. And goyim do not have krisus. Goyim have marriage, they do have marriage. But how do goyim make a marriage? The answer is they move in together. How do the goyim break up a marriage? They move out. So the Rambam in his opening of Hilchos Ishus talks about what was before Matan Torah. You met a woman. He said, "Let's get married. You go live together. You're married." And then the Chas Halacha that no, you don't just get together and say, "Let's be married, live together." You have to do bits of kiddushin.
I never quite understood that, because you don't know that you're living together for extended period of time until you live together for extended period of time.
No, you don't have to. Who said extended period of time?
People decide to live together.
So yeah. That's something that's like their role. Yeah. They decide to live together. So they live together. That constitutes marriage. It doesn't, I don't know, I don't, it's not hazeh, it may not constitute marriage, because the assumption is they don't want to be married, they doctor don't. They could, but they choose not to. But in principle, that's what Torah marriage is for the off. You know? Will you marry me? Yes. Okay. And they go moving together. That's it. Happily ever after. I hope. So, anyway, so the goyim are not any krisus. They don't have kiddushin and gittin, which is a dissolution of kiddushin. That's why they can't be, even though we believe that they're telling the truth, it doesn't work, because the eidim are essential. Right now, we're assuming the eidim chasima are essential for these gittin to be good. Rabbi Shimon Omer, af edu ksherim, he says that, no, even gittin nashim shukre vodem ar ksherim, lohusku el vizman shenasim hedyon. So that's something in the Mishnah. Lohuskuru, their own things are only possible if they're nas in the hedyot. The gitei nashim shukra avadim, or even maybe the mamonos that the Gemara will talk about. So the Gemara says kaposik v'tonim. When the Mishnah says kol hashtaros except for, which means all stars except for A and B. Lo shna matana, lo shna matana. It doesn't make a difference whether you're dealing with a sale or you're dealing with a matana. Now, when you're dealing with a sale, let's assume of karka here. So the Gemara says, "Bishlama mecher michiyag zuzei kamayu hutakana ushtara raya ba'amahu." Could very well be that when you sell land, so how do you transfer land? So there are three ways of transferring land. What are the three ways of transferring land?
Kesef,
Shtar, and Chazaka. Kesef, we understand. And what does Kesef mean?
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be the value of the land. It doesn't have to be the Mekarka, but you give Kesef. The same way you Mekadosh and Isha, when you give an Isha Kesef, okay, you're, Daniel, you got married. How much do you think ballpark the ring that you gave Jasmine with her? Could be in trouble for not. Make up amounts, will you? Okay, $100. Okay. Is that how much she was worth? There's only one correct answer to this. You know that. The answer is priceless. Right? Not enough kesef and zav in the world. So when you make the kinyan kesef by an isha, it's not the price, because the kinyan kesef by isha anyway is not dina mamon. It's not kinyan mamon. It's a kinyan isser only. But even by things which are mamonos, you can give a shavakuta to be code of the field. Later, you're going to have to pay for the cost of the field. The kesef is just a formal, it's the mechanism of transfer of property. Transfer of property, in the case of kiddushin, it's the change in personal status. So that's what you could do. So but typically, you might give kesef, you might even give the full value of the land once you're doing it. What does it mean to be kona karka b'shtar? That's the crucial point here.
You write up a shtar that says that this person is being kona the shtar from this other person, and it's signed by
No, not quite. There's something imprecise in that. The shtar says that you're being kona the karka, and the giving over the shtar is the mechanism by which you transfer the karka. You can do that, by the way, by a mechar also. When you're selling it, and the guy just owes you the money, the same way you can take the shtar through that. Ditto for chazaka. What is chazaka? The Gemara says in Bavdasra, not on God, there were parats. You change the locks on the door, you break down part of the fence, you put up a new fence. Those are things that only an owner does. It demonstrates violence. So those three things are part of chazaka. So you, when you kona chazaka by a sale, you also have to pay the money of the field. So, but typically by a mecher, you might just give money, and that might serve a dual purpose. And so when you sell a field generally, let's say you give kesef, when you kona b'chazaka, do you have a shtar for the field?
Yeah.
Why?
So that people will know it's your field.
Shtar raya. Right, there are two kinds of shtaros in halacha. I'm definitely talking about this in shir recently. I reminded you that the Rambam holds that shtaros, that the whole idea of shtar, that the shtar is only made of a sofren because it's mitzvah and balon tiksavam. So did we talk about this shir? There's a famous Rambam about this because there are a lot of questions. But what they say, I think he says for the Rambam, is the Rambam holds that shtari raya or the rabbanon or mitzvah itself from shtari kinyan or mitzvah raisa. Well, obviously gerish is mitzvah raisa and shachar oh, it's mitzvah raisa. But even a shtar mekach, if you transfer your field by a shtar, that's also mitzvah raisa. But shtari raya or only the rabbanon. So and now remember that a shtar mekach is dual purpose. Right, when you're makna field through a shtar, number one, it serves as the mechanism of transfer. Number two, it serves as a raya for the person who wanted afterwards that he actually was kona the field. So the Gemara says the Mishnah implies that all shtaris except for Gittin and Shechur Avadim are good when the goyim signed in it. So the Gemara says Bishlama Mecher Yichiyay Zuzei Kamayu Hu Dekana. When he gives the money over, he's kona in front of the Edim, but you don't need Edim, right? You don't need Edim to transfer field. You don't even need Aden for a shtar. When you're makna with a, I don't know about the shtar mekach itself, you don't need Aden to witness the handing over the shtar. You don't need Aden to witness the chazaka. You don't need Aden to witness the giving over the kesef. The only reason you want Aden is because if there's a dispute later and the guy claims lohayd ramel, then you have a problem. And that is, I don't know if there's a requirement here, but you're not allowed to lend money to somebody without Aden or shtar, because it's lufnei iver, because on purpose or not on purpose, somebody's going to make a mistake, and he might end up coming to steal from you, intentionally or unintentionally, because you allowed it as the possibility, because you loaned the money without raya to back it up. Whereas, on principle, when I lend you money, when I sell you a field and you make a proper kinyan on it, doesn't matter whether an agent to that or not, it's still a valid kinyan. It just may not be proof in court. That's the Gemara in Kiddushin, the third parent, a very important Gemara. But the Gemara has the whole discussion. If a man and a woman decide to get together, they decide to elope, and they don't have witnesses to the kiddushin, or they have one witness, and they both swear up and down they got married. So the Gemara ultimately says, A lot of the Amorim have suffered by an Echad, but ultimately I think we paskin that there's not even a suffered. I don't remember what the Ramah says. But at the end of the day, we say that the Edis are Edis is Lakiyah Madavar, and you need, if they have the Edin there, the marriage is not a marriage. It doesn't matter if they both swear up and down, it doesn't matter if the Ribono Shel Olam comes and testifies to us, it doesn't matter. You need Edis Lakiyah Madavar. But when it comes to Dinei Mamon, so then that same Gemara, I think two of the Amorim came and asked someone and said, I think if they were dividing up their father's estate or something like that, and do they need witnesses if they both trust one another is a problem. And he said, Lo ibre sade am l'shakare. The only reason why you need witnesses by Dinei Mamonos is because of liars, people who will tell untruths, and therefore that's the only reason why you need Edus. So that's true generally by Shtar Mecher. And therefore, and we believe them, the Elos, they come out, the Edom, the Kasvim, the Edom were not in Arkos. Edom who signed in Arkos are trustworthy people, the Arkos only allows that, and therefore they would not have signed on the document that's saying that someone, you know, borrowed money, someone gave money to the person field. They would not have done such a thing if it weren't true. Elamatana, but my Kani, how are you coming out from Matana? Laba Haishkara, you need a Kasvim Shtar? We would say it's a piece of garbage. Chaspa means literally it's a cheres. It's like a pottery shard. It's worth nothing. Because if the Edom signing on the Mekach is what makes it a Shtar Mekach, and if you don't have Edom sharing on the Shtar is not a kosher Shtar, so you can't transfer with a Pasul Shtar. You can't transfer the possession of the field. So the Gemara here gives two answers. Amar Shmuel, Dina the Malchus Adina. But the reason why it works, even situations where it's not just the Raya, when it's just the Raya, so there's an Umdam of the Muchach, so it's a good Raya. But even when it is required for the transfer of property, it works. Even though the Edom are Psulim, even though this is not a good Shtar Mekach, Shtar Hakna, Midaraisa, because Dina Malchus Adina, the government has the right to reassign property. Then the Gemara gives a second answer, which is to say, B'Yiboy Seima Tini Chutz Mikikidit Dinashim. No, don't say in the Mishnah chutz mi gite nashem, but chutz mi ki gite nashem. And what is the fundamental characteristic of a get? Although a get is a dual purpose shtar as well, the fundamental purpose of a get is that it's a shtar hakna. It's undoing the kinyan of the kiddushin, the makbe to the isha har freedom. And therefore, anything that's like a get isha, any shtare hakna that are not just shtare raya, but are at least shtare hakna, they might be both. So the Mishnah says are no good. The Ran here has a discussion about these Teirutzim of the Gemara, a very important question. Are these Teirutzim of the Gemara arguing one another? So the Ran first, he doesn't accept this, but he raises the possibility that the second answer rejects the premise of the first answer. The problem is, how can you say the second answer rejects the premise of the first answer? The end of the Pusabina is accepted halacha. We quote it in many places in Shas, although usually Shmuel, but nonetheless it's accepted halacha. So how can you say that we don't postulate the first parents? So the Ran says, what you would have to say, and this is a big issue in Choshen Mishpat, you would have to say that according to the second terence of the Gemara, Dina Malchus Sabina only applies to those things, only to those things which are between Jew and the government. If there's something the government, or when, they mean the government has a personal vested interest in that if you've done this way. Most of the time, it's really just related to taxes and use of public resources. That's where Dina Malchus Sabina would apply. But between two Jews, where the government really doesn't care fundamentally, Dina Malchus Sabina doesn't apply. And therefore, if two Jews engage in a transaction where it's a shtar hakna'a, and it's done, and it has goyim who are hosted, the government doesn't care whose field it is. They have no vested interest. And therefore, Dina Malchus Sabina would not apply under those circumstances. The Ran ultimately rejects that. He thinks that both Teirutzim exist, but we need the second Teirutz for situations in which the first Teirutz isn't relevant. In situations where, what was his language exactly? Hold on. Yes, whatever that means. I know what Hormen the Malchus means, Rishus HaMelech. It would mean in situations where the government doesn't really have anything to say about it. Where it's not that the government doesn't care. You can do whatever you want. And therefore, the fact that you put these shtaros in our house somehow doesn't matter to them. It has to be a situation where there's no law, but there's nemanus. Otherwise, it wouldn't work because there's no nemanus. Is that right? No, it's got to be a case where there is no law, where there is no law, and therefore there's no dilem of chosidina. The only question is, now the mamash doesn't help you because it's kara hakana. Yes, Danny.
Would the Ron's first answer not work for the democracy? Like, is that assuming it's a corporate?
No, but one of the qualifications. So this is a big machlokas the Shach and the Ramban. It's not clear exactly what to put where. One of the things to remember is that most of the time, things that are contract law between parties will follow dinim chosadina because it's the assumption of the parties involved. In other words, let's say what is considered a mekach tos and what's the standard of proof. So this party, anything that the two parties can modify, and is usually assumed in commercial transactions when Jews interact with non-Jews, are probably the assumption when Jews interact with Jews as well. You have to figure out the cases in which, where exactly, you know, for example, again, it's not always entirely clear what are going to be the cases that form between these two shitas. Because, yeah.
I just think more simply that in the first case, the answer is assuming the government didn't care about individual subjects in the Jewish community.
Look, I think there's a different issue. I said this, I think, last week. Dilem HaChosadina, 2 weeks ago, is a very foreign, I don't want to say separate this because Jews didn't have a choice. It's a very outsider's perspective. Right? Dilem HaChosadina is a formulation that makes the most sense in the context in which it's Jewish autonomy. And then the government interacts with the Jewish community, or sometimes various communities, for its own needs, right? And here's the deal. You Jews do whatever you want. This is what we don't want. You pay us the taxes to us. We don't want to have people killing each other because that creates problems for us. That's not good. But basically, you can maintain law and order in your community, follow your laws wherever you want. Just make sure we get our money. Right? We maintain the bridges and the roads and the armies, and you make sure you pay us our taxes. So the Jews in the medieval period was different in that. I don't know exactly how it was involved in the Talmudic period. To what extent different communities had the same range. But in medieval Christian Europe, Jews were definitely, it was like there was the rest of society, and then there were the Jewish communities had autonomy, but they had obligations to the outside community. So these are cases, yes, in which so much of internal Jewish law is going to be governed by Choshen Mishpat. You can't invoke Dinam HaChosadina because it's not even meant for Jews. You're correct. In the United States, while things are subject to being modified, the government doesn't really care in most cases if two Jews want to follow Choshen Mishpat, but lots of Jews, because we're intertwined, we're citizens in the full sense, we interact in every possible way, the assumption seems to be that what we're going to be thinking when we build houses for non-Jews, we build houses for Jews. So am I thinking, well, with you I have one set of contractual stipulations, with you I have the other? I mean, so look, all good contracts spell out what they're going to be anyways, it's not a question, but in situations where it's not there, what are the default assumptions you operate with? A lot of cases, I think, Bakhtin are going to use secular law because that's what the parties were working with in big contrast. You have to kind of figure out what is the gap between the, I'll call it the Shach and the Ramah, is not so easy. If you push me a little bit, I'll go a little bit, try to go back and take a look at it again to see what are the cases that really fall in between. Okay. Right, I'm not going to push on now. All right, later in the week, so Wednesday and Thursday will be BTS, so I'm going to try to start, we have just a little bit, a little tricky, so it's not conceptually difficult, but just the texts are difficult, and then we're going to get into sort of the last part of the parak, which moves away, which gets to the Zachiah stuff, which is particularly interesting, it's a broader topic.